The music mood has considerably shifted here on the Lions and Ball show this morning. I'm John Lyons alongside WEEI's newest member, Dan Ball. If you don't know who he is, that's too bad for you, but he's here with me and he will reintroduce himself later. Don't worry. I mentioned Dan. Oh, by the way, Jackson behind the glass.
Good morning.
How are you, Jackson?
Good morning.
Very good.
Good. Good. If those you didn't, if you weren't listening at 7 a.m., Jackson hit us with heavy metal to start the show.
Yep. Woke you up and now easing you into your day nicely. And I only want Soto to be with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I haven't even had coffee yet because that metal hit me. I didn't even need it. So Juan Soto, the Red Sox. Dan, you had this in your lead this morning about, you know, there's rumors, reports, some more credible than others, it feels like.
Oh, yeah.
But the Red Sox are in it. And we've had a lot of reaction to this text line, phone line of folks wanting Juan Soto. Are the Red Sox really going to do it? So before we go any further, I want to hear from some folks out there. Let's start Jeff in Watertown. Jeff, good morning. Welcome in.
Good morning. Good morning, guys, and enjoying the show. I always love these shows when people get a chance to get up from behind the the glass and come up front and all that. So it's
thank you, too, Jeff. Some have called us the most handsome fill-in show on the radio. I'm not sure if that's true, but what do you got for us,
anyway,
Jeff?
Anyway, I'm a long-time Red Sox fan, long-time caller to the station about the Red Sox. But the thing is, I believe, I'm cynical, but I believe the Red Sox are in on this. I think they need this, to make a splash like this. The only problem I have is I think it's going to be more than $600 million because right now Juan Soto doesn't have to leave his base. He can stay based in New York. He has two biggest teams, around as far as money spending, trying to outbid for him. Maybe he's going to come here, but I think it's going to take a lot more money to make him want to move. But having said that, I think they are trying. But to me, the most exciting part about this is because then you get to do things like I think they would trade Tristan Casas. I think he's the left-hander they would trade, even though I think I've compared him to a young Mo Vaughn before. I still think he's probably the guy they would move. They could put Devers at first. That opens up they can get a right-handed third baseman, to help there. It just opens up so many more things to them. And he is a generational hitter, so, you get that as well. So I just don't think they're going to have to go way over what the New York teams would offer, and I just don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, Jeff, appreciate the call. And I think when it comes to can they do it, will they do it, Dan, I don't think you and I expect them to have the $300 million New York Mets payroll or the Dodgers, we're going to defer money until the end of the universe type payroll that they have. But
right.
They should be able to be a top five payroll team consistently.
Right.
So and the other piece of this, and I think Jeff makes an interesting point that if the Yankees and Red Sox both offer 600, does he just stay in New York? Or if the Mets and the Red Sox both offer 600, does he just stay in New York? Now, the advantages the Red Sox have are they're better set up long term for success, at least with the farm system, it seems like. And he would be the leader in the face of the franchise, where the Mets can't offer him that, the Dodgers can't. The Yankees can't. It comes down to, I guess, what's most important to them. But on the money thing, in terms of the Red Sox, you got, Willy Abreu and Roman Anthony and Kyle Teal and some of the, for the next 3-4 years, these guys are going to be making $1 million each or less.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the flexibility for the next few years to pay one guy $60 million when the other, and even Jaron Duran, I think, is still cost controlled for a couple more years. If I have that wrong, please call in and correct me. But you're going to have a cost controlled half of your lineup. So, I mean, this is why you draft, like Sedan Rafaela, that you Brian Bayo, you've already assigned an extension to. You're all
right.
Set there. So you could sign a Max Fried and a Juan Soto. And yeah, that's a crap load of money, or a Corbin Burns and a Juan Soto. I get it. Or even if it's you don't get Soto and you go Fried Burns. I know but first of all, you're the freaking Red Sox. You can afford it, okay? But you have, as a result of building your farm system, which I've been hit over the head with for 5 years now, how important it is, you now have cost-controlled guys. Like, even Casas is eventually going to get an extension, but
right.
For at least this year, he very well could be a cost-controlled guy unless they decide to sign him this year. So you have these cost-controlled options which can balance out adding a player like Soto and a player like Max Fried.
Let me give you the numbers for 2025. Rafael Devers makes $29.5 million. That's not going anywhere anytime soon. Trevor Story, 22.5. Masataka Yoshida, 18.6. Then, Brian Bello, $2.67 million. That's in the escalating extension.
And I will say, by the way, if you sign a Soto, very good chance you move on from a Yoshida.
Absolutely.
So that's $18 million off the books.
Right. So, and then Rafaela, 1.25. Yeah. Essentially, everybody else other than Garrett Whitlock and Liam Hendricks are all ARB eligible, including Jaron Duran, to your question, who is not a free agent until 2029.
It's a long time.
It's a long time.
And even in arbitration, look, he'll make a lot of money. I get it. But, yeah, it's not going to be that kind of deal. And they might lock up Duran early. But if you lock up Duran early, he's not going to get Soto money. He's not going to get money like that. So you're going to, like you did with Bello.
Right.
Now, it won't be as cheap as Bello, obviously. But it will be cheaper than he would get on the open market. And so they have the money to do it.
They do.
It's just, again, what are the factors that are most important to Soto? If he likes playing in New York, he's going to stay in New York because the Mets. I wouldn't be shocked, Dan, if no matter what the Red Sox or Dodgers or Yankees bid, the Mets end up bidding the most.
Well, there have been, I'll call them rumblings because I don't know if they're necessarily reports. It depends on the source that you're getting it from. That Steve Cohen is willing to throw $50 million extra on top of whatever anybody else's offer is.
Right.
But in the same vein, there are also rumors, and this is the same thing that we saw with Shohei Ohtani last year, and I believe with Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It may not be just to the highest bidder. It may be more nuanced than that, where there is a number that they have, call it 15 years, $700 million, or whatever it is. And from there, as long as you get to that threshold, then he makes his choice from the best fit of the teams that have matched that number. Yeah. So to your original point that you made on Soto, your sales pitch is crucial. If you flew in Pedro Martinez, good, do it again. If you flew in David Ortiz, I know he missed one meeting because he was tending to his, I think his father was sick. If he wasn't there, fly him down there and have him meet again. Everything that you can throw at the wall, fly Wally the Green Monster down for all I care and have them meet in person if that's what it takes. But the sales pitch, at least in my own personal opinion, is going to be the thing that gets this thing over the finish line more than just, hey, I'm the Mets, I'm super rich, but maybe I don't necessarily have the best situation or the best pitch that you're walking into.
And I think one thing that scared me a little bit in this process is there was reports after the Red Sox met with Soto. He asked about their farm system, which I think is smart.
Yeah.
But he asked about their plan and their commitment to winning. If you have to ask about someone's commitment to winning, that's a huge red flag. Because you don't have to ask the Dodgers about their commitment to winning or the Padres, who Soto previously played for. You don't have to ask the Yankees about their commitment to winning. So it's imperative, to your point on the sales pitch, the Red Sox have to convince him, yes, we've had three bad years in a row. Yes, we built through the farm system. Now we are ready to take the next step, and you're going to lead it. And there's a texter, let me find it here, from the, I think it's further down, but they mentioned the Theo Epstein influence. And I think that's such an awesome point. And this is something that we talked about here when Theo was brought in January, that it was probably too late for Theo to do anything for the 2024 offseason and team. But for 2025, Theo could have a big impact. And I know Theo now, it's not the GM role or what it was, but he's probably, in my opinion, the only guy out there that can walk into John Henry's office or Tom Werner's office and say, guys, you got to spend more money. You're being too cheap. He's the only guy with that level of credibility now that Larry Lucchino, rest in peace, is gone.
Right.
I think Theo is the only guy out there that can walk into their office and say that, and they'll listen to him. Right? You and I can walk in their office. Craig Breslow can walk in their office and say, we got to spend more. They'll be like, oh, yeah, we should. Theo's the one guy, because of what he did here, because of what he did in Chicago, because of his stature in the league, and now that he's at the ownership level, whatever the stake is, he's the one guy that could, I think, walk in there and say, pay $650 for Soto, and they would listen to him. And pay Soto and Corbin Burns. Because I don't know how you feel, even with Juan Soto, and if they sign Juan Soto, I'll walk around the studio and give you a hug. I'll be so excited.
Right.
Their biggest need is still a frontline starting pitcher.
100%.
No matter what.
100%.
So even if you sign Juan Soto, you need Max Fried or Corbin Burns or Garrett Crochet or some combination of two out of those three. So Theo, to me, is the one guy and say, yeah, well, when we won in 04, we had Schilling and Pedro, and we had Manny, and we had Ortiz, and we had these other guys. When we won in 2007, we had Manny and Ortiz. We traded for Josh Beckett. We went out and got these guys. So I think his influence to me behind the scenes, and I know it's a different role than it was 20 years ago, I think could be crucial in this entire offseason in pursuit of Soto.
There's a report, John, that I've been holding on to this week for dear life, and I'm hoping ends up being gospel. It was from Alex Spira earlier this week, and it said that the Red Sox do not view their pursuit of Juan Soto and their pursuit of a frontline starter as one or the other has to happen, where they're pursuing Soto while also fully understanding that they need to rehab that starting rotation. And I certainly hope you're right, because it's been proven that you have good arms. Tanner Houck, good arm. Yeah. Brian Baio, good arm. Lucas Giolito coming back has been a good arm 3 years ago, but he has
yeah,
been.
Yeah, right. On the White Sox 3 years ago, he was good.
Right.
Yeah.
But the same thing that we've seen from every Red Sox championship team is that horse at the front of the rotation.
Two, really?
Absolutely.
And that's the thing to me, and I was screaming about this all last offseason on this station. With all the great pitchers that were, it wasn't just Yamamoto. It was, imagine if this team last year had Shoto Imanaga.
Oh, man.
Imagine if this team last year had Dylan Cease.
Blake Snell. Who signed for 1 year.
Yeah, Corbin Burns.
Yeah.
Like, the Red Sox were in on none of those guys.
Right.
I mean, I know there was the report after they offered Yamamoto 300, but the Dodgers went past it, and the Red Sox didn't keep up, and then none of those other guys they were in. They could have put together a better trade package than the Padres did for Dylan Cease.
No question about it. Yeah.
So I look at this Red Sox pitching staff and I say, if they're going to win a World Series, I want Houck and Baio to be my third and fourth starter.
Absolutely.
And I want two horses at the front. At worst, if Houck is my two and Baio is my three, you can probably work that out and be a championship contender. But you look at the Dodgers, who just signed Snell to go with Yamamoto. Oh. And you know,
have you seen that rotation?
Glass now. Oh. It's the Monstars from Space Jam.
And Ohtani.
Yeah, and Ohtani.
And Ohtani's coming back.
Yeah, but I'm not even saying they got to be that.
Right.
But I think they need two frontline starters. And if Houck is my three, Baio is my four. And that's where this Soto thing is another critical piece, because I love that report that you mentioned. You can't sign Soto and then have Houck and Baio be your opening day and day two starter.
Right.
Like, you have to sign Soto and then also sign Fried, or also sign or trade for Crochet, or also sign Burns. Or don't sign Soto and get me Fried and Burns.
Absolutely.
Fine.
And then add me Teoscar Hernandez, who wanted to be here so badly last
Teoscar
year.
Hernandez. And sneaky then, reason the Dodgers won the World Series.
100%. And there's your right-handed bat.
Or Sasaki from Japan.
Like, right.
You,
right.
But even if you add Sasaki, I want him and Burns, mm-hmm. or him and Fried. Because, again, Sasaki coming over from Japan, younger guy, who knows how good he's actually going to be. Like, they need. So that's where I'm hoping, I'm praying, if you will. Can Theo Epstein's influence here really make a difference? Because we've seen Dave Dombrowski wanted to continue to spend. Dave Dombrowski wanted to re-sign Mookie Betts and Bogarts, and he got fired because of it.
Right.
Chaim Bloom, he was hamstrung. Now, also, there was years they had $200 million payrolls that they weren't that good. That's on him.
Yeah.
But he was hamstrung to a degree from spending. Certainly. He wanted to spend. He got fired. If Breslau wants to spend, I mean, are they going to really listen? They'll listen to Theo. No doubt in my mind.
Right. What I want to know more than anything else when it comes to this ownership group, too, is what finally clues them in that, hey, things aren't peachy keen anymore. Things aren't as they seem. I would hope last year when we saw Fenway Parks that were three-quarters full, half full. I went to that late July Red Sox-Yankees series on that Saturday game where they went to extras and O'Neill missed the fly ball in the ninth. And it was 50-50.
Yeah.
I was out in right field, and it was all Yankees fans.
And it's like, I went to a Red Sox-A's game, and obviously the A's are horrible.
Yeah.
They're moving. There was, like, a decent amount of A's fans there, and I'm looking around, I'm like, why are there a decent amount of A's fans?
Right.
Here? Like, you know,
because your passionate fans aren't going.
They're frustrated.
Of course.
And they should. And I think the word that should scare the Red Sox, and hopefully scare them into doing something, mm-hmm. is apathy.
Yes.
And there's been a level of apathy setting in among Red Sox fans, because it's like, okay, you won the World Series in 18, and then you let all these guys go. You haven't really been in on guys that can help improve your team. Yeah, farm system, but we're not the Rays. We're not the Pirates. You know, why are we doing this? So that's why, again, not to harp on it too much, but I think that Theo influence could be a huge deal. But We haven't even talked yet, Dan, about the best team in Boston.
Yeah.
The Boston Celtics.
The reason why I was thankful yesterday.
They have an NBA Cup game tonight, which I don't care about at all. But I do want to talk about the return of Kristaps Porzingis, how they might manage him tonight. We're going to get to that coming up next, but first it's time to trend with Dan Ball.
Jones and Keefe, weekdays 10 to 2.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending now on WEEI, and it's sponsored by Shaw's. The Patriots get set to host the Colts on Sunday at 1 o'clock at Gillette Stadium. New England is currently 2.5-point underdogs. 13 players listed as limited participants at practice on Thursday, including wide receiver DeMario Douglas and safety Kyle Duggar. Indianapolis, meanwhile, had four players that did not practice, including two notable wide receivers, Alec Pierce and Josh Downs. 14 games in the NHL slate today, one of which features the Bruins hosting the Pittsburgh Penguins. Puck drop is set for 6:30 tonight at TD Garden. The game will air nationally on TNT and Max. Boston most recently beat the New York Islanders 6-3. The six goals tied a season high for the Bees offense. They hadn't reached that total since October 10th against Montreal, their second game of the season. We're talking more about the Celtics next. They play their final game in group play of the NBA Cup tonight when they take on the Chicago Bulls. Tip-off is set for 8 p.m. at the United Center. A victory over Chicago plus a Cleveland victory against Atlanta would give the Celtics the Group C championship. Boston owns the tiebreaker against Cleveland. And finally, after a Thanksgiving triple header that you heard right here on WEEI. Week 13 of the NFL continues with a Black Friday showdown as the 10-1 Chiefs take on the 2-9 Raiders. Coverage of that game begins right here on WEEI at 2:30. Today only, stop into your local Shaw's or Star Market for their daily deal. Save $3 per pound on chicken wings. That's perfect for football. That's right. Save $3 per pound on chicken wings. Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh. I'm Dan Ball on Boston Sports Original WEEI. More coming up after this break.
Back here on WEEI, John Lyons alongside Dan Ball. Jackson, our producer.
Woo!
Scrambling back there because I just kind of screwed him over with like 30 seconds before break. I was like,
that
oh,
was
by the way,
wild move.
Do you have anything from Porzingis from the other night?
And he's like, I was going to say we should pull back the curtain a little bit and say that that happened about literally 20 seconds before.
Yes.
And I can probably find something maybe a minute before, but
yeah, I felt bad because I was like looking at my like notes here and I'm like, oh yeah,
don't feel bad.
Yeah, you know. All right, fine. I won't feel bad then.
Yeah, well, it's a team.
I feel good. Then.
We're all in this together.
Yeah. Are we doing better, by the way? First segment of the show, you would say the plane taking off not well. I remember that.
Oh, no, I think we're doing excellent.
Okay,
was mostly me, I think.
I think that was mostly me. I said the wrong number of the
text
line.
Oh, that's right.
That was not ideal.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Day, it's like, hey, look who they have in charge, the guy who doesn't have the text slide correct.
Yeah. Well, that's what a producer's for. So I corrected you when we moved
yes,
on.
Yes, and thank God, because I don't know what people would be texting if they had just listened to me.
Some random station in like North Carolina is getting texts. What about Soto the Red Sox?
So it's 37937 is the text slide, yes. And, of course, 617-779-7937. We've talked a ton about Juan Soto and the Red Sox today. Also, their need at starting pitcher. You're welcome to call and text in about that. Same thing with the Patriots. We're going to get to that later. Bridget Prue is going to join us at 10:20 to talk Bruins. I can't wait for that. I'm looking forward to her take on where the Bruins are at now. But I do want to spend some time, Dan, talking about the Boston Celtics, the return of Porzingis. And most of the discourse around the Celtics so far this season has been that song from the Lego movie, you know, Everything is Awesome, because it just has been.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. And Andy Hart, your new coworker, made a great point a few weeks ago. It's not a homer take if it's right.
Hmm.
And he's correct.
Wow.
So I think the Celtics...
Look at him being right.
I thought
broken
the Celtics
clocks
were gonna,
right twice a day.
I thought the Celtics are going to beat the Mavs in the finals. I wasn't being a homer. I was right, as were most people that watched the Celtics play last year.
Because they're incredible.
I think they're going to win the championship again this year. Not a homer take if I end up being right. And they should. The reason I bring that up is, yes, the Celtics are awesome. But I wanted to talk about this week specifically for the Celtics, because I think it's a valuable week in terms of where they're at this season. Because you get Porzingis back Monday, which earlier than a lot of people expected, early reports were December, maybe even closer to Christmas. He comes back November 25th, looks great, you know, 23 minutes, 16-6-2 with two blocks. You know, he hit that second three-point attempt. He missed his other threes, but then went in the post. And we're talking about a guy that on points per possession in the post last year, Dan, of everybody that had at least one post up per game, he was the best in the NBA.
Right.
So you're getting back the best post scorer in the NBA, an elite post defender, which he never gets enough credit for. But when you look at the teams the Celtics have played this week, and you go back to Sunday before Porzingis came back, they play Minnesota, pretty good Western Conference team, maybe not as elite as they were last year, still working some things out. But that was only the second Western Conference team they played this year.
Right.
Golden State being the first that lost. They had 118-112 earlier this season. And we know how good the West is. West is better than the East. It's loaded. So them playing the Wolves, beating them in a close game, albeit a game they had a 19-point lead, and then following it up with a beatdown of a pretty good Clippers team too, that to me is really valuable. Because the Western, and I know you can only play one Western Conference team in the playoffs, right, if you get to the finals, but that's the better conference. Those are the tougher teams. I want to see how the Celtics hang with those guys. And they lost to Golden State in a close game, but Jaylen Brown didn't even play. You beat Minnesota. You beat the Clippers. Now, tonight, you have an NBA Cup game, which I don't care about at all, the NBA Cup.
Couldn't care less.
But maybe for some of the players, at least for Chicago, it'll be a heightened level of intensity.
Yeah.
So the Celtics are going to get maybe a tougher punch than they even normally would get as the defending champs. And then Sunday, you have the Cavs. The number one seed in the East, one game ahead of you, team that you did beat. But now you're going to Cleveland. You have Porzingis now. You weren't even at full strength when you beat them. How do you look in that Cavs game? Because I think this week, if they can beat the Bulls and then beat the Cavs by 8 or 10, reasonably convincingly with Porzingis, mm-hmm. we're going to look at them as... okay, they can win 70 games. If they stumble tonight or they lose to the Cavs, then we're going to look at, okay, they can still win the finals, but maybe they won't win 70 games, right?
Right.
And I know that's kind of the bar we're setting here, but that's how good they can be.
Well, it's an earned bar, and it's an earned bar to say, to debate whether or not they can win 65 or 70 games. And it's also an earned bar where you're justified in looking across to the Western Conference and going, okay, who can we beat in the finals?
Yeah.
Because aside from Cleveland, and to your point, we'll get that measuring stick at the end of the week, there really hasn't been anybody that's jumped out in that Eastern Conference that even makes you break
Knicks
a sweat.
Been disappointing.
Yeah.
And the Knicks have been better recently, but still disappointing.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts there.
I'm a big fan of what Orlando is building, but they feel like the Celtics when Tatum and Brown were young, hey, they'll give you a series. They're good. They're going to be really good, but they're not there yet.
Right, and you went through this whole song and dance last year where, do we need to worry about the Knicks? Do we need to worry about the Sixers, the Bucks, whatever else? And it all proved to be worth talking about, but really wasn't much of a challenge. And now that you're back into another season, same roster, same level of dominance, now you're fully healthy with Porzingis back, and you don't need to tax him that much either. That 23-minute mark that he hit a couple days ago, and I think that's probably where he's going to live. There will be games where he plays more, but if you can keep him between, 23 and 27, 28 minutes a night, use him where you need him. Allow him to give 100% in those 25 minutes or so versus giving you 60, 70% over a 35-minute span, you're loaded. So the long way of saying, John, I think you and Celtics fans alike are fully justified in looking across at the Western Conference and going, all right, let me hunt and peck and see who my true competition is, because you're just not getting consistent competition from the East other than one team.
And I would even expand this out. I know I've talked a lot about this week, but you have Detroit Wednesday night, a team again you should beat, Miami Monday too. But next weekend you have back-to-back Milwaukee Friday night. They are playing a little bit better.
Yep.
And then Memphis, who right now they're the 4 seed in the West, but don't forget 2 years ago they were the 1 seed. That's a really talented team. Ja Morant is fully back there. So how do you play against these teams now that Porzingis is back? Because I agree, I don't want Porzingis to play 35 minutes a night until like late March.
Sure, okay? Absolutely.
Wait, fine with me. But Porzingis, to me, he acclimated right back in, and he looked fine Monday night. But as you play these good teams, the Cleveland, the Milwaukee, the Memphis, how do you look against those teams? Do you blow out Milwaukee? And are we sitting here saying, okay, maybe it is just Cleveland and these? Or is it a close game against Milwaukee? And you're like, ooh, maybe Milwaukee has bounced back, figured something out when they play the Knicks later on. And they're going to have, in early January, pretty brutal stretch where they have to go to OKC, go to Houston, and go to Denver in like 5 nights.
Right.
Or whatever. This right now is, I think, going to help set them up for that stretch. Because I think that when we look back on this regular season, that early January stretch is going to be the one we look at. Mm-hmm. The OKC, Houston, Denver, and I think Sacramento is right after too. That's going to be what you and I and Celtics observers look at and say, all right, did they show that they're the champs again?
Yeah,
right?
Because it's basically a playoff series that right. you're in, with the travel and with the kind of competition you get, that's a playoff tune-up right
and
there.
And I think this week, again, I know it's a month, this week can help set them up for that because right. they're playing good Western Conference teams, they're playing good Eastern Conference teams, so yeah, they're the defending champs. Yeah, they're the best team in the league. But I want to see how they play against these teams because I feel like when we talk about the Celtics and can they win back-to-back, can they be one of the better teams of all time? Last year's net rating, one of the best ever, right? I feel like a lot of the great teams we think of, whether it's the 80s Celtics or even think about teams that went back-to-back, like the 90s Bulls, the mm-hmm. 2000s Lakers, the LeBron Heat teams, the Warriors, I feel like we don't look at it as two separate championships. We look at it as one run that had two championships. Like we talk about the Durant Warriors.
Yeah.
That was a two-year span, but it felt like one run together.
Right.
Or the LeBron Heat. That was a four-year span, but it felt like one run together and they won two championships. And Porzingis being back the other night felt kind of like a continuation of the finals because
yeah.
I think the best the Celtics played last year was the Porzingis minutes in game one of the finals.
Oh, no question.
They could have beat the Globetrotters in that game. Like that was, but my point is that that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
This, you know, not just tonight, the Bulls, okay, but Sunday against
but the
Cavs.
NBA Cup, John.
Yeah.
Come on, it's on the line.
Do you care about that at all?
No. And I would venture a guess other than the financial aspect, the players don't either.
Yeah. Like when they played Cleveland, was a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. Everyone's like, oh, big, you know, NBA. I cared because they were playing the 15-0 Cavs.
Right.
I didn't care because they were in the NBA freak. First of all, the new Celtics new City Edition jerseys, probably the one mistake they've made all year.
Yep.
Not a fan of those.
No.
I don't like the different courts either for the NBA. I mean, I don't hate them, but some of them, like that one in Washington that's like pink and red, I'm like hurting my eyes looking at the Bulls one from last year, too, was just awful.
Yep.
But I mean, the NBA, I don't know, man. Like, show up for 82 games and just play them. You know what I mean? There's enough in it. And I know why they do it for marketing. And I think sometimes the NBA overmarkets itself. Mm-hmm. Like, do you really need a new City Edition jersey every year? Like, the Red Sox had their City Connect, the yellow ones, and
yeah.
they're going to change. They had them for 3-4 years. They were great. They
absolutely.
Were cool.
Right.
Right? I want them to keep them. Like, the Celtics a couple of years ago had those Bill Russell-inspired City Editions. They should have just kept those.
Yeah.
They were great. Why do you need a new City Edition? I know this is a tangent, but why do you need that? Why do you need a different NBA freaking cup court every year? Like, I don't know.
Well, it seems like a justified. You've seen how the numbers are slipping, right? I mean, NBA rate. I mean, it's not significant to where you're in like the hockey category, but you are losing a little bit of steam. I would wonder if maybe there's too much that's being thrown at NBA fans.
And this is a side take, but the NFL might fall into that.
Really?
All the Wednesday Christmas game, the Black Friday. Not now, but in 5 or 6 or 7 years. There's a danger of oversaturation.
100%.
I think they're and especially like these City Edition jerseys. So I'm going to buy a City Edition jersey and next year it's going to be obsolete.
Right.
Like, you know, unless it's a, like again, the Bill Russell ones I thought were legitimately cool.
Yeah.
So those you can wear whenever.
Right.
But yeah, so now it's like last year I bought a pair of the City Edition Celtics shorts. Most money I've ever paid on a pair of shorts, by the way. It made me sick. But now it's like, and I still like them, but now it's like they're almost obsolete. Like,
right.
It was a year ago I bought these. I actually bought them, I think, on Black Friday last year.
Oh, wow.
It was a year ago.
Yeah.
And these things are obsolete. But again, that's a side, total side tangent. I don't care about the NBA Cup, and I don't like the Celtics' new City Edition uniforms. But what I want to see is this game against Cleveland Sunday, the Miami game even Monday night, the Milwaukee-Memphis back-to-back next week. Does this look like a continuation of last year? Because I think those truly great teams that we look back on, you know, those Lakers, Kobe, Shaq teams, you pick anyone you want.
Yeah.
It never feels like two separate runs, two separate championships. It feels like one run together that involved multiple championships.
Something I wonder about over this next stretch as well, and I'm going to borrow a term from Red Sox land that's going to make Red Sox fans groan. How much of the throttle do the Celtics need to use?
I thought you were going
to
say sustainability.
No.
I was waiting for that. I was like, which word is he going to go with here?
No, the interest kings. No, but do the Celtics need to use the full throttle in order to win? Or can you still manage Porzingis' minutes and still go 9-10 deep on the bench as you've been doing and still win these games against these championship caliber teams? And are you willing to deviate from that, given the fact that you're only in November? Does it mean that much to you to make that statement against a Cleveland, or can you keep playing your game and then know that you can ramp it up and really go to 100% come March and April?
And how do they manage a whole season where everyone's kissing their ass?
Right.
Like, and not to be crass, but like really, last year they were disrespected all year, and honestly, considering what happened the previous couple playoffs, somewhat deservedly.
Yeah.
Now they, and even in the finals, right? Everybody's picking the Mavs, which. Whatever. But they win the finals all summer. What's the talk? The Knicks, the trades, this and that, the Olympics and the controversy. So the Celtics really, for an NBA champion, were about as disrespected as you can be over a summer. But it feels like over the past few weeks, especially with Porzingis back, people are like, oh, they really are that good. And so now how did, and I'm not saying they're going to lose focus, but just how do you keep everything locked in when you know you're better than a lot of other teams? You're outplaying those teams. It's you don't want to just say fast forward to the finals because you have to get there.
Yeah.
So how do they keep? So and I think that's why these games against some of the better teams, especially in the West, I think it'd be really valuable.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's a fair question to ask, even for the most highly paid professionals. Everybody looks ahead. That's just what you do when you're a champion and you're that dominant. It's human nature. So maybe the reinjection of a Porzingis kind of shocks the group back into focus, and you get a good couple weeks, if not a month, 6 weeks of good focus from that.
That's like when Dan got hired. He looked ahead to, oh, Black Friday. I'm like, John and Jackson. Hell yeah. Forget about this Hart and Arcan guys.
Yeah, it's not like I was looking. I was focusing on Christmas break or anything like that.
No way.
Nothing like
that.
Come on.
Yeah. If Ken Laird, if you're listening, Lions and Ball, Christmas break. KJ and Lions, Christmas break. Jackson, Christmas break. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Book them all.
But we're going to be right back because speaking of Dan Ball, if you weren't listening earlier, he is the newest member of WEEI. We're going to reintroduce him. We also are going to read for the last time today a bunch of New England high school football scores, one of the great traditions in New England. If you have any that have not been read yet, please send them in to me, tweet at Dan, text them in, whatever works for you. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to give some kids some shout outs and some teams some shout outs as well. So we're going to do all that coming right up.
I could get some
Jackson, I know this song.
I thought you would.
Thank you.
Almost at the three-hour mark, you got one.
I got one. Oh, no, what was it? There was one earlier that I do.
Oh, yeah. Passion Pit, Walk Away or something like that.
Yeah. So let me know when you want to play some Polo G.
I don't know what that is, but you tell me.
Okay, all right. I was like, one time I said that, and some guy texted in. He's like, Lions is like Michael Bolton in The Office. So remember, he listened to like the hardcore gangsta rap.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like that Regulator song, that's like the white person rap anthem.
Yeah. Oh, Office Space. Did I say The Office? Man, I'm ashamed of myself. Office Space.
I was like, Michael Scott? Like, I know what you were going for.
Office Space, by the way, my favorite comedy movie of all time.
Really?
I laugh my ass off every time
it's
I watch
it. It's a strong
that.
Pick.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much, like, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care. Like, what would you say you do here? Like, I don't know. There's so many, like, or even when Bolton's like, yeah, that no talent ass clown started winning Grammys. Like,
it's just so quotable.
Oh,
so many quotes that apply to so many different
areas. And there's so
many,
like, real, no matter what your job is, the frustrations, those, like, the commute scene at the beginning sometimes is like me driving up I-95 on my way to the studio.
Oh, 100%.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so there's so many, no matter what your job is, there are so many things.
You've had that boss.
Yeah.
You've had that drive.
Yeah.
And you've had the thought of, all the other stuff.
You've had to do TPS reports in one form or another. But, that is my actual favorite comedy movie.
100%. Okay.
Dazed and Confused is probably second.
See.
Love that.
You just named mine.
Yeah. All right. Love,
all right.
I was talking about this with KJ the other night. I think one of the most underrated funny moments in a movie ever is in Dazed and Confused when McConaughey's character, I forget his name, but when he pulls up at the gas station next to that girl, and he's like, hey, you need a ride?
Yeah.
And she's sitting in her own car. And she's like, no, it's okay. I have my own car. And then he's like, oh, well, you want to ditch the two geeks? Let me know. And we'll go. And I'm like, it's such an because like she's literally sitting in the driver's seat of her own car. And he's like, you need a ride?
I have a story that rivals that actual scene, but this happened to me in real life. It wasn't written.
You asked the girl if she needed a ride
seat of her car? No, but same type of situation. No, so I'll just tell the story. I was at the premiere of Black Mass, the Johnny Depp, Whitey Bulger
movie.
Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft were walking the red carpet going in. And so
you
I was
asked them if they needed a ride?
No, I was interviewing them, and I asked what they thought of the movie. And Robert Kraft looks at me, he goes, we're walking into it now. We haven't seen it yet. I asked what they thought of the movie when they're walking into the movie.
Yeah, that's you just wanted to turn around and punch yourself right in the face. Like, yep, okay, yep. Oh, no, that's just, to me, that's such an underrated scene. Like, yeah. You need a ride? No, I have my own car.
Well, I love when they drive up and he does the all right, all right, all oh, right. Yeah. You can hear the kid in the back of the car go, oh, Christ.
Yeah, like, it's such a... Oh, you know what? It's funny. I want to go home now and watch that movie.
Yeah. Might have to.
Before we reintroduce you, Dan, we do have a call on the line here waiting, wants to talk Red Sox. We've been talking quite a bit of Juan Soto today. Steve in Springfield, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
Hi, guys. I just wanted to talk about the fact or the need the Red Sox have for starting pitching. It's not just needing one. I think they need at least two because I'm not real high on Brian Bello or Lucas Giolito. Bello, he never goes deep into games, or hardly ever, and his ERA every year, it's well over 4. And Giolito, you don't know what you're going to get with him coming off that big surgery he had. And he, the year before his surgery, he gave up a ton of gopher balls. Yep. So I really think they need pitching big time, not just one. They need two. They need to get two quality guys. They could have had guys like Seth Lugo. And
Steve, you're preaching to the choir. We were talking about this earlier. Dylan Cease as well. Seth Lugo's a good one. Preaching to the choir.
He was runner-up for Cy Young, and he didn't sign this crazy money contract with the Royals, but you know they just didn't want to spend it all, and they need to start. That's my only thought.
Love it, Steve. Thank you for the call. Yeah. And just to Steve's point, to wrap up this, I mean, 57 quality starts last year, 15th in the league. The year before, they only had 47. 12th most home runs allowed. They had 1,353 strikeouts, which sounds like a lot, but it was like 19th in the MLB or 20th. It was near the bottom. Also, their bullpen, 10th most bullpen innings pitched, which I think contributed to the 24th bullpen ERA.
Yikes.
So the starters weren't going deep in games. Even when they had Chris Sale, and I know Chris Sale won the Cy Young, that hurts.
Ooh, yeah.
But 2 years ago when they had him, he started 20 games and he only threw, I think, 102 innings. This guy was going 5 innings a game. Right. Like, that's been an issue. So regardless of what happens with Soto, minimum one frontline starter. And if you don't get Soto, I want two.
I'm willing to say that this offseason has not been a success if you do not go out and get Garrett Crochet. I think Crochet specifically solves so many issues, especially if you get Juan Soto. Rumblings said that they were going to have Willier Abreu lead that package. There's a left-handed bat that you're subbing out one for one.
Sure.
Heard Cutter Crawford might be a part of that. That's a starter for starter. And he's cost-controlled, same thing as Duran, I think, until 2029. So you're cheap, front-of-the-rotation type guy, lefty, which you do not have, and you don't have to worry about the money. You can allocate it elsewhere. There are so many reasons to love that.
The only worry I have about Crochet is he's never thrown more than 170 innings or something like that. So, and again,
it's a fair concern.
But, you know, we said that about Houck last year. You know, at some point you have to do it.
And you also need those guys to progress. Like, you can't have the same burnout that you had from Houck and Bayo and Crawford in September
Those guys in August?
Right, that's when you signed
Rich Hill. What was it, May, Houck was the front runner for Cy Young.
Absolutely.
And by the end of the year. Yeah, so I think that's a... Crochet is a fascinating one to me. I just think if they got Crochet, I wouldn't want that to be the only guy.
That's a fair point.
Like, I'd want to sign Fried and trade for Crochet. So 100%. And that would be for me. But Dan,
yes.
Before we go further down this Red Sox hot stove rabbit hole that we've talked so much about today, I want to take a minute here. For those that don't know, Dan Ball is in his first week at WEEI. We did introduce him this morning. He's been on the afternoon show. But for those of you that maybe missed this morning, you weren't awake yet. I know it was 7 a.m., Dan, why don't you take a minute or so, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, John. Yeah, it's by the way, it's been a pleasure to do this first show with you.
You haven't been furiously texting Ken, never put me with this guy again. This guy sucks.
No, I'm trying to actively book our Christmas shifts together, as a matter of fact. But came here from Albany, New York, 3.5 years on the ESPN radio affiliate out there on their afternoon show, which was a ton of fun. Graduated from Quinnipiac in 2020, studied journalism there, ran their student radio station, and have done a bunch of work in the college hockey scene with down at Quinnipiac as well and out at RPI with their programs for the last couple of years. So lifelong Boston sports fan. We had Steve from Springfield. That's close to my heart because I'm 15 minutes minutes south of Springfield on the 105.5 affiliate. So to all you guys driving around, listen to that one. Thank you, and I'm right there with you. But it's been a dream come true to start here, quite honestly. This was my station growing up, and the reason I'm in radio. So I'm having a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And like I said, welcome in. Been a pleasure to work with you so far. And one thing we also did earlier today, which I want to do for one more time this program, some pretty cool high school football action yesterday. Yeah. It's a cool tradition, but there was also some great games. So I just want to give a few shout-outs here. We did get a text in on the text line from New London in Connecticut. Their running back, Demetrius Fletcher, 8 touchdowns yesterday in a 52-21 win.
So unreal.
8 touchdowns, as Larry David would say, pretty good. Plymouth South, 19. Plymouth North, 7. Thank you for texting that in. Methuet, 40. Drakett, 6. Shane Easton, 250 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. And that for Easton, 2,000 rushing yards this year. Pretty in a high school season, 36 touchdowns.
How about it, Shane?
Can he go right to the Patriots, right to the NFL?
Yeah.
A few other scores here from both Wednesday and Thursday. Milford, 42. Taunton, 41. Jack Buckley, 4 touchdowns in that game. Blackstone Valley, 35. Nick Muck, 31. Marblehead, 42. Swampscott, 6. Really cool thing, both of those teams, they got to play at Fenway Park. So that's a memory they'll have forever. Abington, 18. Whitman Hansen, 6. Michael Riley sets the Abington passing touchdown record for a career. He now has 32 touchdown passes in his career, so congrats to Michael Riley on that. Aponequit, 26. Old Rochester, 14. Brody Jolie, 299 rushing yards in this game. How about that?
I need the official scorer to tack on one extra yard there.
Give the guy 300.
His knee wasn't down there. Give me a break. Yeah.
And one final score here. Dartmouth, 21. Fairhaven, 16. Dartmouth won that game due to a game-winning touchdown run by Jackson Hart. You may recognize that name. Shout out to Jackson Hart and all the great.
Can I just point out one thing real quick? I've worked with Andy dozens and dozens of times for over the 2.5 years I've been here. He's never told me once he had a kid named Jackson. How weird is that?
Oh, yeah. I actually didn't put that together until. Oh, and sorry, one more thing.
Sorry.
Mansfield head coach Mike Redding won his 300th game yesterday.
Wow.
Thanksgiving. So,
man.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Maybe he named his son after you, Jackson.
Yeah.
Andy Hart.
I like that.
But yeah, shout out. A lot of great high school football action in Massachusetts over the last couple of days. Shout out to those great performances and those teams that are still going to play next week for the Super Bowl. You can hear those Super Bowls on 850 WEEI. But coming up next, we're going to talk about the Patriots-Colts game. What are our keys for the Patriots to win this game? Can they win this game? And don't forget, Bridget Prue is going to join us to talk Bruins at 1020.